After a rousing late victory over Blackburn in midweek, the 4-0 hammering away to a Sheffield United team who rested most of their key players felt like a real kick in the gut for Reading FC, and with our heads barely above water ahead of next weekend's six-pointer, this game provided the Royals fans with four reasons to worry. And welcome to episode 185 of the Tireless Den podcast with your host Mark Mayer, and joining me for his personal triumphant returns to the podcast, but sadly only half of a good result to talk about in terms of the last two games, is Dave Handbags Harris. How is it going, mate?
It's not too bad. Good to be back in many ways. It's all right.
Yeah, it is all right this week, isn't it? It's hard to get too excited about the Blackburn game. It's also perhaps hard to get too disappointed about the Sheffield United one. We'll be talking about that in a second before News Bites Mailbag and the preview for the Rotherham game, which comes up on Saturday. Before we move on, though, quick mention, thank you to all the Patreon subscribers and everyone who continues to donate to that. We'll hopefully be down at the Jose Gomez Star Fans Forum, so if anyone wants to come up to, if you know, you recognise me personally and wants to come up and say hi, that'd be great. And also the Hall of Fame thing that Star are currently in the works to do, we should also be at that. So anyone who wants to come and have a chat with us, we're always around. And speaking of which, Jack Killick and William Reed, thank you very much for some very kind emails we've got in the last couple of weeks just saying thanks for what we do. And we hugely appreciate anything like that. So it always motivates us to come out on a Sunday afternoon and talk about a 4-0 defeat, which I suppose we're going to have to do now in the recap.
The Tilehurst End Podcast.
Read the blog
on thetilehurstend.com.
Right then, Handbags, let's talk quickly about the Blackburn game. Just a brief word on it. For me, it kind of gets summed up as a bit of a casual first half, which we came out with the lead in quite luckily. Second half, we created more chances. Probably should have had the game done before they equalised, but we won the game. A bruising win, but a win nonetheless.
Yeah, I think the first half, well, pretty much the whole game, I think Blackburn did, to an extent, a little bit of a number on us. They obviously knew exactly the way that we were going to play. They set up well. They picked up a lot of the midfield ball, particularly in the first half, and left us very much just about treading water, really. I mean, it felt like that if Blackburn had anything remotely sort of clinical about them, they would have done us, really. That's what it felt like. They could have been 2-3 up at half time, yeah, if they'd have, the two chances that they did have, they should have taken them. They must have been really kicking themselves at half time going in 1-0 down, albeit it was an excellent goal. Well, so, it was really well taken by Swift. The second half, we came out better. We gave it more of a go. We got the ball out wide. We worked quicker. With the ball that we did have, we worked it around a lot quicker than the first half. And that was quite pleasing to see, the intensity with which we were trying to play, particularly the second half. And that's one of the things that's going to stand us in good stead, because that's the fundamental difference that I took from the Blackburn game, between that and the previous incumbent introducer of possession football, shall we say, with Yap Stam, was that Stam's was very ploddy. There was a degree of intensity about the second half of the Blackburn game, and I think Blackburn can certainly come out and say that they were unfortunate not to take anything from the game. But, you know, it was one of those games where we just had to dig in, grind the result out in many ways. We did so. It was good and pleasing to see that, obviously. It's the one game that I've seen under Gomez so far, and it wasn't massively inspiring from a technical point of view. But from a heart and desire point of view, it was pleasing.
It was, and I know what you mean. In the second half, it actually turned into a bit of an entertaining game, in complete contrast to the first half, which couldn't, you know, apart from the goal obviously we scored, couldn't have ended quick enough, in my point of view, watching it. It was just a pretty dreadful game to be at, in a large sense, a real lack of atmosphere in the first half. But the way we finished it, How then disappointing was it for Sheffield United scoring within the first minute on the Saturday game? Because the heart and desire that you're talking about there is the sort of thing that in the Championship you can't have that in fits and starts. You need that pretty much permanently. And a team like Sheffield United is exactly the sort of team that has that, you know, for 90 minutes. And, you know, as I say in the intro, they didn't really play their best team. And, you know, by half-time, the game was completely over.
It was really quite depressing. You know, certainly when you look at the goals, except for the first goal, they're not switched on. They're not switched on at all. And one of the things that, you know, alongside the heart and desire, it was equal measure. You need to be concentrated at all times. And you can see what happens with the goal. They play it across the back quickly, and then it's just a straight ball forward into feet with a runner who's totally untracked. And I'm not entirely sure exactly who it should be. Ajaria seems to be just completely bypassed. The defender pushing out of defence, following the striker who's pulled out, leaves the gap behind, and nobody fills that gap.
It kind of looked in the highlights to me like Liam Kelly was the man, perhaps meant to follow him.
Yeah, he's just switched off, and you know the Mark Duffy's running behind, and Liam Kelly, is he shirking responsibility, or is he complaining about somebody else's responsibility there? Because you see him just put his hands out as like, well, what the is going on?
Yeah.
His response is just, even then it's too late. The ball across is an easy one, and it's just a simple slide in, and you know it's a good one. Don't get me wrong, he put it in exactly the right area. But it's just so disappointing. And that, you know, you used at the start of it, a kick in the gut. And that's just the kick in the gut that you don't recover from. Certainly at a club like Sheffield United, when they see us starting like that and they get the bit between their teeth, and, you know, they're a good side. They're not top of the league for no reason, or towards the top end of the division for no reason. You've got to go there, and you've got to be switched on from the off, and you've got to try and play your game. But it's just remarkable how the concentration levels of some of the players that we have just aren't there, and that is by and large the problem that we have. It's not necessarily technical ability that is the issue. It's the concentration levels and the switching off at critical points in time. And 38 seconds, was it? 40 seconds? You've got to be on it. You knew what they were going to do. They were going to come at us. But to, you know, to go and lose 4-0 to a side that doesn't even have their first choice pairing up front, albeit the pairing that they did have was very good. But yeah, I don't get it. I really can't get it. It strikes me as just a distinct lack of professionalism at times.
It's funny, isn't it? Because we've said all that about the first goal, and we can say all of that exactly the same again about the second goal, which is a complete gift, and it shows that we're still vulnerable when passing it out around the back. And the third goal, I think, is pretty much a carbon copy. In the highlights again, it looks like Lewis Baker, who came into the team for Swift, basically seems like he rested Swift for this one, which, you know, I don't think was the reason that we lost, so I'm not going to argue with it much. But Baker was the one who lost his man for the third goal. And fourth goal's deflection, irrelevant. We had a bit of a go in the second half. The game was gone. I'm not going to focus too much on that. But those three goals all came from, as you say, that lack of concentration, that making the wrong decision, thinking that someone else is going to do the main thing that's going to alleviate the danger. And ultimately, no one taking responsibility. And Sheffield United, kind of, for the first three goals, walking the ball into the net.
Exactly. And that's the most disappointing thing about it all, is that We've almost presented them on a plate. That second one in particular, you think, you know, at 1-0, you kind of think, all right, it's early in the game, but let's get it together, and let's start, you know, sort of giving it a bit of a go, and then that happens. I mean, it's a stupidly ill-advised pass out from Martinez in the first place. Kelly was always going to be out-muscled in that circumstance, because the pass out isn't quite right. I don't necessarily blame Kelly. He's trying to do what he's there to do, is show for the ball. Why Martinez doesn't just play it to one of the wide defenders? If we must insist on passing it out from the back there, and then you know, play it to was it Miasca, who was to the keeper's right, but into Kelly, who's got a man breathing down his neck. And then, yeah, it's just a shambles from there on. The goal was inevitable as soon as we lost the ball. The third goal, yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, again, it's a decent ball out, but there's nobody, and this was one of the issues that was endemic with Stam's time in charge, was that all too often we ended up conceding from a man who was totally unmarked, untracked, somewhere between 12 and 20 yards out. And it's exactly that as happened with Gary Madine. And yeah, I think it was Lewis Baker who was the man closest to be able to prevent, you know, to at least put pressure on the run. There's not really much more you can say to that, other than you just gotta be professional and be alert to developing situations. And all too often we're not.
No, absolutely. Well, let's hear from Jose Gomez himself then, and hear what he had to say after the game at Brownell Lane.
So it was a tough game, but again, I said this when we won. We have no time to think and to lose and to cry or to celebrate. We need to recover and prepare the next match. And in my opinion, will be the match of the season.
Well, we're focused on the goals. Let's round off this chat then with just kind of placing where this game sits in kind of Reading season, and with 13 games to go now, where it sits in the relegation battle. Because there was kind of a debate online after the game in terms of whether fans who were you know, slating the Reading performance, whether they were overreacting, or whether those who were, you know, saying that it's not such a bother, it's that, whether that's a sign of our low expectations, or whether they're kind of ignoring the issue in that sense. And it's either the case that Sheffield United were just clinical. At the end of the day, they had 14 shots to our 10. That stat doesn't reflect a 4-0 game. Or did we just gift them easy chances? One example of this is the XG stat, which kind of predicts the expected number of goals your men score over the course of a game. That had 2.2 goals that Sheffield United to score to 0.5 that Reading were meant to score from their chances. And 2.2, XG never goes up to, you know, fours or fives or anything like that. So 2.2 is quite a lot in terms of that stat, if you're not familiar with it. But where do you sit on this? Do you think that Sheffield United were just clinical, or were the chances that we gave them just easy to score?
Bit of both. I mean, when a team is presented with a chance, they've still got to take it. But if you're going to completely expose your goal in the manner that we did, then you've got to expect to concede goals. You can't rely on your keeper all the time. I mean, like I said earlier, Sheffield United aren't top or towards the top end of the division for no reason. They've got players who can take chances. And when you present them with chances in the manner that we did, then you've got to expect them to take them. As I said earlier, again, the disappointing thing was that Sheffield United, they haven't really had to work to create their chances, really, or certainly not particularly hard. So I'd a little bit of fence sitting with that response, but ultimately, yeah, they presented with the chances and they have taken them. And you wouldn't necessarily expect Reading to take those chances when presented with them.
Well, that's what I'm kind of thinking on this, is if we do the same on Saturday against Rotherham and we gave that team those sort of chances, would we say, oh, well done, Rotherham, you're 3-0 up because you're a brilliant team, and if, you know, them taking the chances and being 3-0 up? I don't think we necessarily would. I think the fact that Sheffield United are a good team, that they have scored the goals, I think is a kind of bit of an excuse in a sense, and saying, oh, well, this game was always a bit of a write-off. And which I can understand, but yeah, if we do the same against Rotherham on Saturday, I agree they probably wouldn't score three, but I think they'd score one or two, and we certainly couldn't complain about it. So yeah, we'll get into the Rotherham game a bit later on. Let's move on then, news bites. So we'll come back to the Sheffield United game quite a bit in mailbag, as you can imagine, but let's look around what else has been going on around the club in news bites.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast,
by Reading fans, for Reading fans.
some transfer news to kick off this week then, Handbags. It's the case of Sonny Aluko, who was not in the squad for the Sheffield United game. He's been linked by Football.London, who are the new incarnation of Get Reading, for those not familiar with the media moving and shaking these days. The Chinese window is not closing until the 28th of February, and the team is Beijing Renhe, or Ren, or Ren, or whatever you want to pronounce it, R-E-N-H-E. They are the Chinese team who are owned by Dai Yong, who you may know as the owner or joint owner of Reading Football Club. And this seems like it's actually got some legs in it, Handbags, and if he goes, I'm not too fussed.
A little bit out of the blue, really, isn't it? But if he does end up, you know, going over there, hopefully there's a fairly substantial fee, which will obviously help financial fair play. But am I massively fussed? I think it's fair to say that if he does go, he will have been one of the most underwhelming signings that the club has ever had. Certainly in terms of initial outlay, he came, you know, what was it, £6 million, £7 million in total. Whether or not we've actually paid that money, I don't know.
Well, if it was performance related bonuses, then rest assured we have not had to hand over another penny since he's arrived.
it's a shame, really, because the guy's got a huge amount of technical ability. It just hasn't worked out here for him. For whatever reason, but would I necessarily be sorry to see him go? No, I think, as I say, he's been hugely disappointing for the outlay.
Well, we'll keep you up to date on that on the TylerStand.com, the website that we have that accompanies this podcast, and Twitter channel, whoever it is that you connect with us. And yeah, it's not sure if it's going to be a loan or a permanent deal. Whether it's even linked to financial fair play, of course, this is effectively Dai Yong paying himself for a player. Whether he's going to be doing that to alleviate any kind of financial worries that Reading have, who knows. Obviously the Chinese team that are taking him see him as some kind of asset, and I don't blame him for that. It seems that he could at least have the potential to do a job in China, so we'll keep an eye on that one. And go on to the news of a much more popular Reading player, and that's Andy Wynham-Hotter. He's the official TylerStand Player of the Month for January. And I wanted to raise this really, Handbags, because he's been missing for the last two games with injury, and particularly for the Sheffield United game, the stuff that we've just spoken about. Do you think he would have made too much of a difference in those games? We're talking about tracking runners and stuff. He's obviously a bit more defensively minded, much more physical player than Kelly and Baker and Swift, the centre mids we've been playing, and Ajari as well. Whether he has that necessary tactical discipline yet is another matter, though.
I think, based on what I've seen of him, based on what I've heard other people talk, I think yes, he could have added a bit more steel to that midfield, a bit more drive going forward. He's very old, an old-fashioned English sort of midfielder, sort of put your foot in, get the ball, and drive forward with it. I think he probably could have made a distinct difference. Certainly, we seemed a little bit lightweight on Wednesday, desperately lightweight yesterday, clearly. Overrun by Sheffield United's midfield. Would he have made a difference to the result? I don't necessarily think that he would have done. In terms of win, lose or draw. In terms of the heaviness of the defeat, I think potentially depending on who he hypothetically replaces, I think certainly yes, he could have done it. It probably could have been one or two goal defeat as opposed to the four that we saw.
Yeah, he certainly is the player that is kind of in terms of centre midfield, at least certainly the first name on the team sheet. So I'm not too sure when he's back at the moment, but hopefully not too long. I don't think it is a long-term injury that he's got. So we'll keep an eye on that on the TylerStand for you. And finally, let's round up news bites by looking across the other Reading FC teams. The women's team are, as I speak, facing Birmingham in the FA Cup, having beaten Keynsham 13-0 in the last round. So hop on to the Reading FC women Twitter to check out how that game has panned out. I'm sure you probably already know. They face West Ham at the Mad Stad on Wednesday night. So if you want to get down and watch the women in action, that is the place to be. Under-23s lost 2-0 at home to Newcastle on Friday. They also beat Blackheath in the Barks and Bucks Cup. So on the semi-final draw, they were given Maidenhead away, which is going to be, hopefully, A fantastic evening for Maidenhead senior team versus Reading's under 23 team. So hopefully have a lot of fans down to that. The date, as far as I know, is still to be confirmed. There was also some bad news in that Flatheath win, as Jack Nolan, a very decent young centre midfielder, dislocated his knee. So he'll be out for a little while. Hopefully all the best for his recovery. And quick word for the under-18s. Lost 2-1 at Brighton at the start of the month. They next face Spurs at home on the 23rd as their poor run of form continues. Right then, into the mailbag and some questions on, well, as you can imagine, Reading losing.
Get social with the boys.
Find them on Twitter
at the Tarlhurst End
and facebook.com/thetarlhurstend.
David Stratton kicks us off for the mailbag then. Handbags, he says, should we have expected anything more from this game, referring to the Sheffield United defeat? A few draws and a single win doesn't make a challenge to a top table team. Is our disappointment in this result a reflection of how much excellent work has been done on providing a confident mindset by Gomez for the players and the fans?
In terms of the result, and probably not. In terms of the performance and the nature of the goals conceded and the professionalism of the performance, yes, absolutely, you can expect more from that. I think that's probably wise to just leave it there, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I think in terms of the result, the fact that we have an L next to our name, at the end of the day, Sheffield United are, according to the table, the de facto best team in the league at home. When it comes to the confident mindset and whether we perhaps expected a little bit more because of it, my opinion is really that, you know, we're still in the Championship. We're not necessarily in a sort of league where you go away to a good team and expect to get beaten no matter what. That's not the Championship in terms of the competitiveness, or certainly what it used to be like in the competitiveness that we know it. So there is a reasonable amount of disappointment. The good thing about the Championship is you can go into every game thinking you can get something out of it. And I think that's probably more the factor in terms of why we're disappointed, more compared to what Gomez and the mindset's done. Because I think at the end of the day, the fans are still relatively realistic as to the team's capabilities. So we move on then. And Tom Jordan, he says, why do Reading expect teams to overpower them in the first 15 minutes? Why do they lack aggression in getting the ball back? Do they believe they are too good to go down? Will they prove themselves against Rotherham to be worthy of the Championship? He thinks they will. And related to this as well is that sort of grit sense that Daniel asks, will the lack of grit in midfield be our stumbling block? And Casper Clark specifically asks opinions on Bakuna leaving. I've grouped these together, Handbags, because that aggression and the grit in midfield, it obviously was lacking against Sheffield United. Do you think this is it's lacking because of personnel? And as Casper asks about Bakuna leaving, or do you think it's a case of general mentality around the club, squad, and how it's being managed?
I think, yeah, it's one of those that you need the right sort of player to provide that level of grit and determination, to coin an Alan Hansen phrase there. And I'm not convinced Lewis Baker is that type of player. Liam Kelly absolutely isn't, even though he can be a little bit of a terrier. But absolutely, they do lack the aggression and lack the ability and the nous to get the ball back. That doesn't mean that they're not trying to get it back, of course. But, you know, I think a lot of it all depends on the level of press as well. And I wasn't overly enamoured to see a particularly high press on Blackburn. Sheffield United on Saturday showed exactly how it should be done. They put us under pressure from the very moment, from the very start. Every time we had the ball, they were putting players in areas to prevent us from playing out. They knew that we really wanted to play out. I suppose it all also depends on exactly where you lose the ball as well, doesn't it? If you're going to lose the ball fairly deep in your own half, then you're asking for trouble. And if you're not really getting that much in the way of an attack, then you're not going to be in a position to press particularly high. And you've got to have those players that are capable of playing the ball out. If you're going to play the way we are, to play the ball out and set up an attack. Now, second half on Saturday, as I said earlier, was much better. Yesterday, yeah, we might have had 10 shots on goal. You know, how what particular quality were they? We didn't really have a chance in anger, as it were, until about the 85th minute, I think. Is it going to be our downfall? Potentially. Do we miss Bacuna? You've got to argue at the moment, yeah, we probably do. But then that's probably only because we haven't got Renan Hotter in the side. It's a little bit of a tough one, really. You've got to hope that the players that you have, you know, kind of step up. But are they the all-out sort of 100%, you know, get stuck in, do the dirty stuff players that you're hoping in this the situation that we find ourselves in? No, they're not. Hopefully, though, you know, the quality will show, and we'll have a couple of players that will just, you know, just put their heads down and drag us out of it. It's difficult to see exactly when or who that is going to be. Possibly Nelson Oliveira, who will, you know, single-handedly drag us out of it. But you look elsewhere around that side and you think it's not coming from anywhere.
The thing on Bakuna is that we had these problems when he was there, and maybe he is the type of player who, when surrounded by other players who have, you know, the sort of Legit Wood, Karachan-esque sort of grit and battling about them, but he single-handedly wasn't capable of providing it, was it? When he was at the team, we still suffered from these issues, and it sort of strikes me that, obviously, we've cashed in on Bakuna. We didn't need to sell him, perhaps financially, we'll never know that exactly, but Bakuna being in this team, I don't think it would have. Maybe if you put Bakuna and Winamata in the team, you change things. But Bakuna, he was there for a lot of the time when we had the same sort of problems, though, wasn't he?
He was, yeah. Much of it depends on who you partner with, which I suppose is where Renan Hotter comes in, because, you know, with Renan Hotter in the side, we looked a bit more solid. But certainly, from what I've seen, for that reason, you know. The same goes for every player, though. You're only as good as the players around you. You've got to think, is there better than Leandro Bacuna out there? You've got to argue, yes, there absolutely is.
Yeah, well, there needs to be a sort of, I don't know, I'd say reassessment in the way that we approach transfers, but at the end of the day, I was quite happy in January that we signed players to back Jose Gomez's style. The only problem is that style can be got at, and I think that's probably, as we've described, is what happened with the passing football and everything on Saturday. Let's move on then to Jack Killick in his final question for the mailbag. He says, I was at the game today and Reading really were terrible. Why were we insisting at playing out from the back against the best pressing team in the league is beyond me. We made it way too easy for them, and in truth, they could have won by a larger margin. Thanks to a late Sheffield Wednesday equaliser, that was against Rotherham, which kept us out of the relegation zone, basically. Jack says, I hope the team can quickly move on from this result and not be too disheartened from it. I think it's important on Saturday that every fan really gets behind the team and doesn't look too much into this result. Only thing that worries me for Rotherham is our midfield. We got away with it on Wednesday, but today they completely overran us. Kelly looks way out of his depth, and I can see why he's been out of the team, and I hope he doesn't start against Rotherham. Keep up the good work, Jack. Thank you very much for that, Jack. It really sort of sums up as we've been saying, and I think it's interesting that a lot of the fans are, the fact that we're getting questions about the midfield, it really does show that it has come to the forefront of people's minds, and it has sort of self-identified in the way that we've been playing as a problem area. And that's probably not been the case. The centre midfield for a long time perhaps is one of the areas where fans have felt a little bit comfortable. And for that Rotherham game, we'll talk about that in a second, but just as a little preview for going into that, what do you do to the centre midfield handbags? What's your preferred changes to attack that game? Is Kelly coming out? Renan Hotter, let's presume he's injured still. What do you do?
Yeah, for a start, I don't start the game, Kelly. He's a minutes player at best. My preferred midfield, Renan Hotter's not going to make it, is he? Gomez pretty much stated that yesterday. You've got to, in my opinion, the best that you possibly got is you have Baker or Ajaria as your base too, and Swift behind the front man. And that's pretty much the option that's open to him. And if things later on during the game, then perhaps you bring on Liam Kelly for one of the two
two bass players and start trying to play the game. That's what you've got to do. That's the only option available.
Yeah, well, there really aren't many centre midfielders knocking around of any different qualities, are there? They're all very much in the same bracket with Rinne Mota aside. I think perhaps, I don't know, whether you start bringing someone like John O'Shea in or something like that is a potential in my mind, but I honestly just can't see Gomez doing it, so I don't see too much point discussing that sort of thing. But we will discuss the Wellington game in full now as we go into the last part of the show. Any other business?
The Tarlhurst End Podcast. Any other business?
Saturday, 3 p.m. at the Mad Stad. It is, I mean, it's the biggest game of our season, really, isn't it? Certainly up to this point. It is Rotherham at home, 21st place, 22nd, deadlocked on 29 points. Reading just have the edge on goal difference at the moment. Let's focus on some positives. There are some positives that Rotherham haven't won away from home in the league all season, drawn 6 and losing 10. They've never won at the Medeski Stadium. And in our last 7 meetings, Reading have won 4, drawn 2 and lost 1. So, yeah. All of that is in our favour. Let's see it fall apart before our eyes.
Yeah. I mean, the record at home is excellent against them. I mean, they've only scored one goal against us at Medeski. They're there to be shot at. And, you know, with the quality that we've got, and we know we've got quality in attacking areas, you've got to argue that they should be there for the taking. But it's that that age-old issue that we've been speaking about, the midfield and the exposing of the defence and keeper. That is the worry. And they've got heart. You know, they know where their qualities are. They know what their limitations are. But one thing that you have got is heart. They fight. And they're going to come to us. They're not going to leave it all. We're not going to leave anything on the pitch, are they? And we've got to match that. We've got to, you know, to get anything, any kind of positive result, we've got to match that. And if we're not on it, then, you know, it could be a bit of an embarrassment for us.
Yeah, well, I'm kind of thinking if we have to entertain the idea that this doesn't go well, and if we do lose, we become favourites for relegation, don't we? That's just a fact of the matter. If rather than go away with the 3 points, and there's 12 games left and we've got 3 points and probably a worse goal difference than the team above us, it really will be feeling like relegation is knocking on the door.
Again, it'll be another kick in the stomach for us as well, and one that will be difficult to recover from, because if you lose to your relegation rivals, it really does affect the confidence. It's got to affect the confidence both the players and particularly the supporters. And if the supporters, they seem to have become a increasingly more positive over the last couple of months, and certainly after Wednesday's result, is it the positivity around the place was huge. But suddenly, yesterday's result has certainly hit that a little bit. But if we lose on Saturday, and the positivity going forward around the place, certainly with the two games coming up after that, it's going to be, it's going to end up becoming a little bit more toxic. And it's not going to be nice. It's not going to be pretty.
No, it's not been toxic at the club. Well, it depends on your level of toxic that you really want to go to. But certainly, I think in the sort of Stam end of era, Stam sort of times, is probably his most toxic we've seen it in the past few years and decades in that sense as well. Let's talk predictions then, because it's right tight at the top with Wim, yourself, Handbags and Westy all getting the last 3 results in a row. So you picked up 3 points for that. All but Sim got the Sheffield United defeat spot on. So the current state of affairs, going from bottom upwards, Tom Crocker is on 14, Simeon Pickup on 15, Westy on 17, I'm on 19, Johnny is then on 23, yourself on 26, and then Ollie and Wim tied at the top on 27. So the top 3 separated by just a single point. And I will point out, because the tiebreaker factor is going to start being an issue now, the tiebreaker is done by basically whose predictions are closer to the overall points total that Reading got. So obviously, if you say you're going to win, that's 3 points onto you. If Reading lost, then they didn't get any points. So on this measure, Ollie Allen's predictions total 45 points, Wim's 40, and yourselves, Handbags, 25 points worth of predictions that you put in. So you think that Reading would only have been on 25 points at this stage of the season. They're actually on 29. So your pessimism is paying off in this regard. And, yeah, so you're not doing too bad. Where do you stand on this Rotherham game?
I mean, we saw a little bit of a reaction after Swansea, didn't we? And I think Gomez is going to be exactly the same. We've got a week to prepare for it. And I think, despite the result this weekend, I think we're going to be a bit too strong. I'm going to go 2-0.
I was just thinking 2-0 myself, actually. The 2-0 scoreline sounds good, because I don't think Rotherham are a particularly brilliant defensive team, certainly in terms of the overall league. Only Ipswich have conceded more, and you know, we're not far behind that, but they are worse than us defensively, strictly speaking. Attacking-wise, I don't think they've got really much to offer. I can see them nicking a goal, but I'm not too confident in that. They've only scored 10 goals away from home all season. Again, even less than we've scored away from home. And I think that we've got a decent enough attack to get one, and like we should have against Blackburn, get another. So, yeah, I think there's a reasonable degree of optimism going into this game. But optimism doesn't feel like the right word, does it? Optimism, it's more replaced by general logic, is kind of how I'm approaching this as to why we should win it.
Mm-hmm. Yep, absolutely agree.
So we'll keep an eye on that on the Tyler Seminar. I'll have all the previews, the reviews, and all the analysis for that game. Ollie will be back just before it to fully preview it with Tom Crocker, and we'll be back after that game to see what exactly happened and what could well be a season-defining game at the Mad Stad then. So that leaves episode 185 of the Tyler Seminar podcast here. And Hamags, thank you very much for popping back on. It's been a delight to have you back.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you very much indeed. Been a pleasure.
And we'll be back next week. Keep an eye out for the weekend preview and everything else going up on the Tyler Stand as we keep track of the Aluko transfer and the previews for the Rotherham game, and really just what could turn out to be a pivotal week in Reading's battle against relegation in 2019. We'll reconvene in a week's time when hopefully, maybe not hopefully, it'll be a lot clearer in terms of what exactly Reading will be doing next season and which league we'll be playing in. Until then, come on, you arse. Just starting to